Mr. Nagel was Bayard Rustin's partner for the last decade of Rustin's life. He's here to talk about Time on Two Crosses, the collection of writings of Bayard Rustin, and give us his spin on our LGBT issues. Hi, Walter.
Hey, Charlotte.
We only know what we've read about Bayard. What was he really like?
Well, I think the simplest way to describe him is a very well-rounded person, to use kind of a cliche, a Renaissance man. You know, so often in the film clips and things that you see of him, he's kind of this fierce person talking about getting out into the streets and demonstrating, you know, all of which he did, but he was talking about doing it nonviolently. But he did know how to be militant, and very often that's kind of the aspect of him that comes across. But in his working life and his personal life, he was very loving, very generous, a very gentle person with a wonderful sense of humor. Very intelligent and really multi-talented. He was a wonderful singer. He appreciated beautiful things. He had a very nice little collection of fine art that he had sort of gotten on an activist salary, if that's possible. But he had a wonderful eye, and he really knew where to look for things. So I would say, you know, the simplest way would be just to call him very well-rounded, very well-integrated personality.
How did you meet him?
Well, we met really quite by chance in 1977. We were on a corner in the Times Square area of New York City waiting for a light to cross, and our eyes met, and bingo, kind of lightning struck. And we started talking, and the conversation went on for about 10 years.
Tell us about Rustin's book, Time Over Two Crosses.
Well, Time on Two Crosses is really a collection that sort of spans his life as an activist and his life as a writer from the early 1940s really up until the time that he died in 1987. And as such, it really covers civil and global human rights movements because he was really about equality for everybody. So it goes, you know, African-American civil rights movement really kind of took off in the 50s, but he was very involved in it in the 40s. And so much of the writing from that period through the 50s and through the early 60s deals with African-American issues and civil rights issues. But he was also very much involved in the peace movement, in the anti-nuclear movement, human rights issues, refugee issues, and towards the end of his life in LGBT issues. And so all of those areas are really covered in this book. It's really very comprehensive.
What would you like to see happen with this book?
Well, I'd really like to see this book become a handbook, if you will, for younger activists. You know, sometimes I forget that, you know, Bayard's been dead for almost 28 years now, and a lot of the people that are out there demonstrating now and organizing or in college doing that kind of stuff may have never heard of him. And so I think between the documentary Brother Outsider, which is still being shown at colleges and places all across the country, between that and this book, you kind of get an idea of the life of a very important activist in the history of our country, and I hope that will kind of inspire people to pick up his methods and to follow in his path as they get out there and try and change the society for the better.
What is your personal commitment to LGBT civil rights?
My personal commitment is to be who I am as an LGBT person and more broadly a human being, to support, you know, LGBT equality and issues whenever I can, which nowadays is very often, you know, speaking at colleges and community centers and libraries, and, you know, lifting up the fact that Bayard was a very important leader in the civil and human rights movement who happened to be LGBT and lived during a time when, you know, these kinds of things weren't discussed. And yet he was able to live fairly openly as a gay man. He paid a price for it, but the actions that were taken to try and quiet him never really succeeded. He rose above all of that stuff and was able to make a significant contribution to the democratization of our society as a whole. And so that is really the reason why a lot of younger LGBT folks kind of lift him up now as an inspiration and as a hero. I guess my commitment would be to sort of continue promoting his legacy and his values and to live as an integrated person myself.
What was your reaction to the homophobia that's going on in Alabama after marriage equality began?
Well, I have to say part of me had to laugh, not because the issue isn't serious. It is serious, but I think the opposition to marriage equality is, I would say, in the death throes in this country. We've seen state after state come on board and, you know, recognize the value of LGBT families. and marriage equality issues. And so, you know, I mean, it's Alabama. It's the Deep South. It's, you know, those are the people that kind of held on until the bitter end in terms of racial issues, racial integration, getting rid of segregation. You know, they kind of held out till the end, and I think they seem to be following the same path in terms of LGBT equality. So I wasn't really terribly surprised, or so I think we're making progress here, and I think it's just a matter of time before either our Supreme Court or, you know, just states across the nation recognize and validate LGBT couples and issues.
What would you like to see happen for LGBT equality in the next few years?
Well, I certainly would like to see a definitive decision, if you will, on the question of marriage equality. And I would also like to see more discussion of LGBT issues in our school systems, specifically, I would say, in high school and middle school. It's a very mixed bag as you travel across the country, some of the speaking engagements I've been to. But I think the school systems are generally reflective of the general population in the area. And I think there are states, I believe California is one, and there are a couple of city council people here in New York who are trying to have LGBT issues and curricula introduced into the school system. And I think that's a way of bringing about a honest recognition of the diversity, the sexual diversity that we have in a society, and just, you know, treating it honestly and fairly, and not hysterically, which tends to be approached in some parts of the country.
LGBTQ teens are 4 times more likely to attempt suicide than their heterosexual peers, and we continue to have numerous teens taking their own lives after facing bullying incidents. What advice would you have for these kids?
Well, actually, I think this is an extension of the last question. I think if we had reasonable and rational and a fair approach to sex education in this country in general, not just on LGBT, but in general, people wouldn't feel so alone and feel so desperate when they are discovering their sexual identity. So I think if we had a better approach to sex education in this country, that would help with this issue. But until that happens, I think having someone really to talk to, whether it's a parent or whether it is a teacher or a guidance counselor, even just a friend, I think you really need to try and identify someone who you feel you can be honest with about what you're going through. I think in some ways, perhaps communications, the internet maybe has helped along those lines. I mean, people's world has become smaller and they can reach out and they realize that, you know, they're not the only one out there. When I was growing up, I think the general feeling among LGBT people were, you know, it's just me and I'm alone and I can't talk to anybody about this. I think that has changed over the years, but because of the bullying and the criticism and that kind of thing, I think young people still very much feel alone. And so I think to really reach out and find someone that you could talk to about this would probably be the first step.
How can people get information about Time on Two Crosses?
Well, I think the first thing they could do is go to the publisher's website, which is www.cleispress.com. That's CLEISPRESS.com. And the book is one of the features on their website. So I think they could start with that. And I also believe it's available now in an ebook form in addition to a hardcover form. So I would suggest starting there.
What projects are you working on?
Well, right now, Black History Month is always kind of a busy time of year for me. And recently, I was the co-author of a book for young people, for middle and high school students, called Bayard Rustin, The Invisible Activist. And what I've been doing lately is visiting schools, as well as universities and bookstores, you know, talking about Bayard and talking about the book. Last week I was at a wonderful school in Quakertown, Pennsylvania, United Friends School, and met with kids from kindergarten all the way up through eighth grade. That's as high as they go there. And we had a wonderful exchange. So right now a lot of what I'm working on is promoting the book and educating people about Bayard's values, how to continue that and how to continue his legacy.
Is there a question you wish people would ask you?
I think probably if there was just one question, it might be, what can I do? How can I get involved in the struggle nowadays? I think very often people kind of look back at what happened during the 1960s and we kind of see these towering figures, if you will. You know, you look at them and you say, you know, gee, I could never be that. I could never be Martin Luther King. I could never be a Philip Randolph. I couldn't be Malcolm X. I couldn't even be Bayard Rustin kind of thing. And I think sometimes when you look at things in history, it can be a little intimidating. But I think the important thing to remember, and this is something that Bard was very good at, you know, anybody that wanted to be involved in a movement had a role to play. And what they need to do is kind of examine their own talents and see what they can do, even if there are plenty of things that maybe they can't do. There are things that they can do that they have a talent for that they would like to be engaged in, and to find a way to bring themselves and their talent into a movement. As I said, Bard was somebody who had a really good eye for that, and consequently he was always surrounded by younger people because he could give them jobs to do which they might not think they could do, but they would rise to the occasion and in a sense build their self-confidence about their abilities at the same time. So I think it's important to kind of examine your own abilities, your own talents, and see how you can put them to work to make a better country and a better world.
Do you have a favorite quote, a mantra, to get you through difficult times?
I do, actually. It's not so much of a quote as an idea, and that is really to keep at it. Don't give up. If you read Byron's life, you saw, you know, how many hits he took, how many times there were attempts to try and knock him out of the movement, if you will. You know, they would raise the issues of his sexuality. They would raise the fact that he had a flirtation with the Young Communist League. He had a lot of baggage. And yet every time somebody stood up and tried to push him out, including Strom Thurmond during the 1963 March on Washington preparations, you know, he got up and came back into the fight. And I think that, for me, is probably his most inspiring quality. When I was accepting the Medal of Freedom for him in 2013, you know, I said this to President Obama. I said, you know, because he was taking and continues to take a lot of hits. I said, you know, Bard went through this, and, you know, he never gave up. He never stopped fighting for what he believed in and, you know, to make the country a better place. And so I would say it's really don't give up the fight. I think that's what really he was all about.